Today's episode is brought to you by the E-Commerce Fuel private community for seven and eight figure owners. We have an amazing, vibrant forum where you can connect and get answers to your questions, but probably one of the biggest long-term values is our events, where you can build deep connections with other owners. We have ECF Live, our annual summit, where all of our members and attendees are vetted versus, you know, a lot of e-commerce events where you have zillions of people trying to sell you stuff. We have adventures, great talks, curated dinners. Ecom Camp, which is our annual event for eight-figure store owners and smaller meetups and dinners throughout the year. So if you're looking to connect with people just like you, people in e-commerce obsessed with their business who can talk about it for hours, our community is the place to do it. So if that sounds interesting, you can find out more information and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Looking for help to get the most out of your Shopify store? Don't waste time on theory or untested advice. Instead, download Zipify apps and copy one of the world's most successful Shopify stores. Zipify was created by my friend Ezra Firestone, and you probably know Ezra because he's been a guest on this podcast many times, but he's also the owner of multiple eight and nine figure e-commerce brands, including a $175 million store he built from scratch. And he's created two Shopify apps so you can leverage the same strategies he's using to scale his stores. One-Click Upsell is already the number one upsell app for over 18,000 Shopify stores, including brands like Tushy, Dr. Squash, Buffy, Jones Soda, and Victoria Beckham. And it's so effective that the average One-Click Upsell user boosts their total revenue by 10 to 15% practically overnight. And then there's Zipify Pages. Pages is the most user-friendly landing page builder on Shopify, and it's stacked with over 70 marketing templates so you can quickly generate leads, launch promotions, and drive more sales. And since both apps are tested first on Ezra's own eight and nine-figure stores, you know they actually work. You can try out One-Click Upsell and Zipify Pages for free at Zipify.com. That's Zipify.com to try both out for free. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, welcoming back Leo Caracas. He is the partner at Jump Ventures and the managing director and co-founder at GoCase. And man, Leo, you were on the show earlier this year, I don't know, 6 months ago. Really enjoyed our conversation. I thought you had a lot of awesome things to say and share. Got a lot of great feedback from the episode. Yeah, I thought it'd be fun to have you come back, talk about a few things, new things. Specifically, it's kind of some of the lessons you have learned from coaching, almost 100 different stores at this point. And so we're going to get into a bunch of stuff. But first and foremost, welcome back, man. And thank you for the episode last time. That was gold.
Thanks, Andrew. It was lovely to be at that time. And I hope I can make a good job again and give a little bit of gold to the listeners.
Yeah, now you've got your hands elbow deep in a lot of this stuff. So it comes from a place of doing it. Maybe before we dive into the actual lessons that you've learned, can you give people a sense of the context? So you do Jump, maybe it makes sense to give people a sense of what Jump is. And using that, what's your context for coaching? Like, how have you coached and worked with 100 companies and over what time? Give people a framework to understand where these lessons come from.
Yeah, great. Basically, Jump was born out of passion at a time in my entrepreneurship life where I was looking for a change and I was looking to learn more things, get exposed to new ideas, new businesses, and get new ideas for my own business. Yeah. So I started basically mentoring and coaching young companies, young founders that were trying to scale their business beyond six figures, but didn't know how. And in communities like the E-Commerce Fuel, which is a great community to find lookalike entrepreneurs and in the D2C business, I got to coach some people, got to coach some companies. And it always started back in 2021. So we started basically pro bono coaching and mentoring companies to see if we could help, if I at that time personally could help scale these companies from a six-figure point to perhaps an eight-figure. And that basically turned out to be the case. And I had a lot of fun doing it. I kept doing for the last couple of years. And that created a business, which is Jump. We basically became and we transformed this passion, this project, into a venture capital slash accelerator business. So we have a funnel of new companies constantly coming and talking to us to see how we can help them. And this relationship always starts with a pro bono mentoring or coaching program to see if we can really get them to the next level. And if we believe we can, and if we believe we get a nice partnership and a nice business model together, we go, we come in, we invest, and we scale the business together.
Got it. Let's just dive right into the lessons you've learned from all of these different experiences. I guess that also goes to say, I mentioned at the top, but you're also still doing GoCase as well, right? So you have your own e-commerce business, a figure e-commerce business that you are running alongside all of the coaching that you're doing and the investing you're doing as well.
Yeah, so GoCase was the business I was in full-time at the time that I started mentoring. And little by little, Jump started taking over because we got more and more brands to talk to. We started to actually invest and accelerate brands. And by now, yes, we're still shareholders and directors, but my main focus and of my partner is really scaling Jump Ventures and the portfolio of Jump Ventures.
Yeah. So we'll link up to the previous episode we did if you're curious of how do you scale up rapidly a commodity item like an iPhone case or something like that. We dive into all of that in the previous episode. So, but this episode, lessons from coaching 100 companies. The first one, and this one I'm very excited to geek out on because I love finance. It's kind of it's the language I love speaking. P&L and unit economics. So what have you seen? What are the commonalities you've seen, the mistakes people have made in terms of misoptimizing their income statement, their supply chain, their cost structures?
Yeah, I will start from the beginning on the coaching side. So we got to basically get in touch with 100 plus brands over these last 2.5 years. And we got to help them to a certain level, either mentoring, coaching, having individual sessions, having a long-term relationship for several months. And they are all e-com D2C brands, in the majority e-com D2C brands, in different stages of growth. Some are below 1 million, some are between 1 and 2 million, and some are around 5 to 10 million. Yeah. But you see that they go through the same path, the same experience, they commit the same mistakes, they lack knowledge on the same parts, and they're just looking for how to take the next step. They go through the same journey. Yeah, they all make the same mistakes more or less. And one of these mistakes or one of these areas of lack of experience, for instance, is how they're going to optimize their P&L and how they're going to make sure their unit economics is set for success. So when we come into a company, this is one of the first things we check out, is trying to understand if they have a structured P&L first, which many don't. Yeah, we come in and it's all the accounts and all the management of the reporting is really not well defined. Categories of cost, categories of revenue, where the money is flowing and where the money is going. And then after we see these categorizations, we see where are the big gaps to try to understand, hey, your unit economics are not in the right place yet to scale the operation. So it's a very common mistake for people to try to scale as much as possible and expect profitability without having the right COGS, without having the right shipping costs, blowing up the personnel payroll costs, trying to increase marketing activities without really having a way to have recurring customers coming in. So it's very, for us, it's a very quick snapshot to go and see, look, your P&L has a gap here, here, and here, and your priority 1, 2, 3 should be those. If you fix those, then you can start trying to scale harder. Before that, it's a wasted effort in some sense, you know?
Yeah. So when you say structured, non-structured P&L, I think of a structured P&L, you've got your revenue, your cost of goods sold, get your gross profit, and then below that line, you've got all of your overhead stuff, your fixed costs, right? Your personnel, your rent, categorized hopefully well, and then you get net income at the bottom. Is that what you mean when structured P&L? Because that seems fairly straightforward, but are you saying a lot of the companies just don't, it's just all kind of lumped into one big soup pot and that's it?
Yeah, there is 3 types, I would say. First one is the one that there is not even a ERP properly set and you don't really categorize the invoices and revenue flows in a ERP way. You just do a Google Sheets or Excel report and it's all manual and then you're missing stuff out. Yeah. The second one is when you do have stuff in the ERP, but they are totally categorized. I wouldn't say randomly, but there's a lot of miscategorization. So when you see shipping costs, you are mixing shipping to the end customer and shipping import costs at the same line. You are using Amazon fees together with your own internal fulfillment fees, and then you don't know what's really the Amazon take on the business and what is your operational take on the business. You don't really have a clear view on what is your COGS made up of, like unit cost of the goods, import cost of the goods, the pick and pack of a proper possible 3PL. So the miscategorization of costs and also revenues is a big thing that we see, that this is the where most of the people are in. You know, they have accounts, they log in those accounts in ERP, but they miscategorize in a way that if you have a quick view and you start looking at the one specific category in the P&L, say, look, why are you spending so much on this category? Oh, no, it's because here we put this, and that cost. And yeah, but that's a complete different cost. So when we analyze the P&L, we cannot really optimize based on how it's organized, right? And the third one, which is the point we had to get with GoCase to actually go to the next level, is we took several P&Ls into account. We tried to really do a big research and see how D2C and e-commerce businesses structure their P&L in standard categories, because you can do the big categories like COGS, operational expenses, gross profit. But when you're able to break down a little bit more and you're able to adapt that to an e-com structure, then you're able to view every company the same way. So when you're really able to see advertisement, outsourcing costs for advertisement, payroll, the COGS broken down in a couple of different lines between in-source COGS and outsource COGS. So there's a specific type of structure which we got the companies to be in, so we can quickly analyze their figures.
Yeah, man, this is getting way too excited with all these numbers and figures and what I'm about to ask you here. Can you take us through a P&L? And let's say everything is a percentage base of revenue. What are like green lights? Like, hey, this is a good threshold that you see. And what are the red light levels where you're like, okay, if your cost of goods sold are 20% or less, i.e. 80% gross margin, 20% or less of your top line, green light looks great. If your cost of goods sold are 60% or more of your top line, like, there's no way you're going to make it. Can you give us, and I think maybe the big category is cost of goods sold, personnel, marketing, other overhead, and anything else you think is applicable. What are some of those like bumpers on the good and the bad side that you see, and you either say, great, we're going to invest in these people, or man, we got some work to do here.
So the first things we see is COGS. So we try to understand how much of the revenue the COGS actually represents. And we also understand the type of company we're dealing with. So if we see a COGS that is 30% and below, we understand this is a demand generation company. Yeah. So a company that can generate demand with a new product, a new idea, a new proposition. And this is usually done via Facebook. Yeah. Facebook or TikTok. And if you have 30% and above, then you're looking more or less at the demand capture business. It's a Google business. So a business where people already kind of know what they want to buy, and therefore you can afford not to have so much room to advertise. So it's a strict separation between demand generation and demand capture, because there is not enough room to actually do paid media. Yeah. So when we think about a company that has a COGS below 30%, and usually we target 20%, yeah, we see, hey, this is at a great level. There's enough room for us to go and try to do a paid media acquisition, Facebook, TikTok, whatever. If that's at the 30, 40, sometimes even 50%, they say, look, it's already eating too much of your pie, of your revenue pie. Therefore, there's not enough left for you to actually scale via paid advertisement. So your product needs to sell itself out, or you need to drastically adjust your pricing. Yeah. But what usually we see is companies that are at the 50% or 40% COGS, there's something wrong, because being a demand generation with this high COGS is simply too difficult.
And when you say, and just for people listening, COGS, if you have 20% COGS, that's going to be the inverse of gross margin. So if COGS are 20% of your revenue, your gross margin is going to be 80%. Do you, when you're looking at those figures, are you counting all in COGS, like delivery, like shipping, boxing, import fee, all that kind of stuff? Or are you just looking at the raw product goods from the manufacturer?
I'm looking at the unit cost of the product. That includes the manufacturing cost and the import cost. Yeah. The shipping to the end customer is another line.
Got
that
it.
Has another threshold to be hit.
Got it. Okay, great. So 20% COGS or below, or even 30% or below, you've got the room to be able to do some media, some paid ads. Above 30%, it gets a little bit trickier. What's the next one down the line in terms of the metric that's most important?
The next one would then be paid media. When we look at paid media and we say, if you invest up to 25% of your revenue and you're able to consistently scale or you're able to have a profitable operation, you're in a good path. Yeah. If you are already investing more than 25% of your revenue and then don't have a clear way to scale, you're basically burning a little bit of cash without really knowing where you want to go. Yeah. So maximum 25% is what we advise people to try to keep track to say, hey, I'm able to scale, I'm able to grow, I'm able to be profitable at 25%. If you get used to doing 30, 35, 40%, then you go down a path that, hey, it's we don't know where we're going and we're already spending quite a significant portion of our revenue on marketing. Yeah. Of course, we advise for the companies that we scale that we even go beyond 25% once we're able to play with other factors like AOV, recurrency, so repurchase rate, sorry, because then you have more profit down the line. But at first, trying to scale, we try to keep it at 25% maximum.
Got it. Makes sense. Going backwards just a little bit to the cost of goods sold thing, if you're above that 30%, with the implication that you don't have the margin profile to invest in paid advertising, what is that? Is that something where you say, hey, you need to get your margin profile in line either with negotiating with suppliers or raising prices before we're going to scale this? Like, is there a path forward for people who have cost of goods sold in the 30%, 35, 40% range and you just need a different strategy? Or what do you do there?
For sure. The first thing is actually very dumb, but easy. Is just set a target to optimize. If you're at 50, your target is 40. How to do it? I don't know. But if you set a target, you're going to be able to reach it. You have a higher probability to reach it than if you don't take it as it is, said, hey, this is my COGS. There's nothing I can do. Yeah, it's sometimes so simple, but it's like a lot of entrepreneurs just think, oh, this is my COGS. No, it's not your COGS. It's your COGS if you want it to. You can change the pricing. You can negotiate with suppliers. You can think of a different way to do the supply chain. You can think of a smarter way to do the process, to do the sourcing process. There are several steps you can take. Yeah, but the first thing is identifying my COGS is way too high. Therefore, my unit economics is not in the right place for me to scale. Therefore, I need to decrease it no matter what happens. And then you try to set the target. I'm going to decrease it from 40 to 35, from 35 to 30. But this is the first step, right? And the second step for us is trying to understand, okay, the COGS is not right. But if we look at the product, if we look at the reviews, if we look at what customers are saying, do we think we have a demand generation business or do we think we have a demand capture business? What I mean by that is, do we think we have a product that we can sell, propose, and generate desire immediately? Or this is something that really has to follow a certain demand? People need to be in the right time in their life, in the right, like, we cannot generate demand out of thin air. Right? These are companies that we try to understand, hey, based on what we see here, it's tough to just implant an idea in someone's head to say, you should buy it now. You should buy it within a week. This is just, it's just not the right time or the right place for people to buy it now. So there's not much room to go and try to make this a demand generation business. Yeah.
Is the implication there that it's much easier to capture demand than it is to create demand with like top of funnel, Facebook ads, things like that. Like if you have, let's say you have cost of goods in the 30, 35, even 40% range, are you still able to build a scalable business based on the back of things like Google ads, demand capture, things like that in your experience?
For sure. You definitely are. And that's why there's a lot of Amazon businesses that thrive. Amazon is a demand capture platform in the end of the day. You see a lot of people already knowing or having a clear idea of what they want to buy, and they are searching on Amazon to see what they want to buy. So we see a lot with functional products, with products that have a specific seasonality or specific use case that's used in a specific time of the year or a specific time of someone's life. So you definitely can grow, and you can grow a lot. I have to say that it's not a cup of tea. Our cup of tea is demand generation businesses. So businesses we can really grow on the back of Facebook. And this is how we try to help entrepreneurs, is to try to get their business a little bit with that flavor.
Where is the margin or the cost of goods sold threshold where you would just say, hey, like, it's just don't even think about it. Like, this is the point where even on demand capture, you've got to move the needle to improve your cost economics before you can even play in the cost capture game.
Yeah. So if I see a COGS that is 40% and above, I say there's a lot of work to be done here. So we can get it to a different stage. When you see it at a 33-35%, you say, okay, maybe there's smart optimizations, simplifying some things, just having different negotiations, then you can already get to the proper threshold. But when you're at the 40 level, that needs to be something else, you know?
Yeah. Got it. Okay. So 40%. So we've talked about cost of goods sold. We've talked about marketing. What about personnel and team?
Yeah. Just before payroll, there's one important category as well, which is shipping. Shipping costs.
Mm.
Shipping to the end customer. Yeah, we're usually talking about B2C companies, and we think about the shipping cost as another one to optimize. And our target is 10%, and we leave a room of maximum 15%. Once you go higher than 15%, things get very tricky. Yeah, so it's hard to scale in a specific country or in a specific shipment a service. So if you are above 15%, you just start eating up too much of the profits. Yeah, so we try to target for 10% and allowing maximum 15%.
Got it. All right, so 15% max shipping, now on a payroll and team.
Now, when we go and think about payroll, it's mainly the same KPIs. We try to target for 10% and we go maximum 15%. Yeah. And one of the things that is very important for people to understand there as well is how you can get by nowadays and how you can grow a company with not so many people or not blowing up your payroll. Thinking about first, how can I outsource this? How can I freelance this job? How can I hire an agency to do a specific task that is not core to my day-to-day? But most importantly, how do I have the flexibility to be asset light? Yeah. And in the end of the day, if I need to fire or quit a service, a provider, an agency, a freelancer, I can do it from one day to the other. Yeah. Once you're very heavy on the payroll, moving things around in a downturn or making sure that you're hitting your profit while you're still trying to scale, but you're too heavy, is difficult. I've seen several examples of people having downturns in their business and then they have a blow up payroll and it's a mess to completely change how the business was looking. While, yeah, it's a heavy ship to steer, so to say.
But what are the areas? I mean, just from my own business experience, from talking to people in the community, what are the areas you recommend outsourcing and keeping in house? Like, I feel like in my experience, bookkeeping is great to outsource. Legal, a lot of those things are great. Marketing is difficult to outsource, not impossible, but I feel like, I mean, the number of people, myself included, who have had problems with marketing agencies, taking that over and being a great long-term multi-year partner and having it work splendidly is, I would say that is not the norm. I'd say that's more of the exception. So thoughts for you, where do you advise people to outsource or where do you advise people to keep in-house based on what you've seen work and not work with these companies?
Yeah, it's mostly depend on a company by company basis to see how we prioritize what do we bring in-house. But once the company is in charge of product, experience, yeah, and content, we see that this is the core triggers for growth. The rest, you can try to outsource, yeah, and see if it fits your needs or you're going to have to internalize later on. Yeah. But if you're not in charge of how you develop products, of how you develop content, of how you think about the experience of the customer from the supply chain side, from the customer support side, etc., you're not in control of how strong the core of your business actually is. So what I see very commonly happening is people expecting that the marketing agency will figure out their business for themselves before the entrepreneurs or the organization actually knows how to advertise, knows which message, which type of content, how to relate to the customers. So this is a very common mistake, and it's not usually a transparent conversation that the marketing agency has with the company. Yeah, they usually say, I can do whatever you ask me to do, and I do it in a great way, and the company, great, I just need you to do this so we can scale. But in the end of the day is, look, if you don't know what I have to say, how I have to say, and in which format I have to say, I'm not going to be able to put my best practice infrastructure or structure of advertisement to actually make it work, right? So a lot of times they are just misaligned on the timing of, hey, I know exactly which product sells, I know which format the product sells, which message the product sells, yeah? And I'm going to give you a constant fuel to try it out and see how we can scale online. This is almost never the occasion. It's usually left for the agency to figure out how to sell, and then it usually doesn't work because they're not inside enough in the company to ask the right questions, to get the right feedback, to ask themselves hard enough why this is not selling, how can we sell it better, how can we understand the customer better, how can we make the experience more valuable on the funnel, on the advertisement funnel. The agencies are not usually asking that much those questions.
Hey, Andrew here, and a quick aside to introduce you to Sam, the owner of ParkerBaby.com, where they sell baby products. Sam's a great guy, a family-focused entrepreneur, has 4 kids, and despite running a very meaningful business, carves out time to spend a ton of time with them. It's a very cool way he runs his life and business. And just a quick little snapshot about his experience with E-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
The first thing that comes to mind, a specific way that ECF has helped my business, my bottom line, was a thread a couple years ago discussing and laying out a plan for reclaiming overpayment on tariffs importing from China to the US. And that thread alone saved me tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. So we got 25% cost of goods sold. This is a healthy profile per your kind of specs. 25% cost of goods sold. We got 25% on paid marketing sustainably, 10% shipping costs, 50% payroll. Let's say we got a few extra people that we need, but we'll round it out. So we're at 75%. So we're at a 25% margin left. What, I'm sure we missed a few. What did we miss in there? What are the other few things that we missed? And what's the net profit profile in terms of margin that you're looking for in a healthy business like this?
I usually think of a healthy business, a business that can stay at 20% net profit, 20% profitability level. Yeah. So you see, if you add things up there, it's 25, there's almost nothing. And then if you start adding small things that come in every, like fixed costs, infrastructure, how to say, what else, software, there's all these little costs that eat up payment gateway, payment processing fees. So you start piling those things up of 1%, 2%, 1%, 2%. You see they weigh up the margin, and in the end, you might be left over with minus 10% of profitability, right? So with this framework, you are setting targets. And again, going back to that conversation, what's the first thing to do with COGS? Set a target. With this, you set a threshold to set targets to say, okay, there's 25% profitability left, and I can try to optimize other areas and see how I can grow asset light and lean. Yeah. But then I have room to make mistakes. If you already start infringing those other thresholds, once it gets to the final profitability line, it's going to be a 5%, zero, negative. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's move on. So your second one is kind of helping store owners focus on minimal effort, maximum impact. And you can kind of think about, I'm not sure if you look at it as like that quadrant. I don't know, maybe it's the Eisenhower quadrant, right? You've got like the urgent, the non-urgent, the important, the not important. This kind of maybe falls in that category. But talk about this a little bit. What are some of the, maybe the, let's maybe focus on the three top things you see that are like the biggest levers people can press and use in their business that you repeatedly see throughout these companies?
Yeah. So when we think about minimal effort, maximum impact, it's a very simple framework to say, what are the things that will require least amount of time, money, and people, have the highest probability to give you financial impact, and can be tested out within a day, a week maximum? When you start categorizing your tests, your projects, your investments like that, and you say, okay, is this going to be cheap in terms of time, in terms of people, in terms of money? Do I think that this can move the needle in terms of profitability, revenue, etc.? And can I get a validation fast, or is it going to take 3 months, 6 months, whatever, to get the validation? Then you start moving in a direction that, okay, forget about all the 80 things I wanted to do. I'll focus on those 20 here. Yeah. The most simple one, and I think we discussed in the last podcast, is pricing, right? Once you understand that, if you do a pricing change, you get immediate feedback. You can validate within 1 day, 1 week, maximum 1 month if you don't have enough traffic or have enough revenue. You understand that it's a simple button change, a simple configuration change on the back end. It costs barely no time, no money, and you get a validation and might have a needle mover sitting in front of you. Yeah. So pricing is one of the biggest levers people can pull to actually increase the profitability, increase revenues, and just get to a completely different level of operations. Yeah.
I was going to say on the pricing front, and I think this is always interesting to ask this, given you've seen the scope of over, you know, so many companies. What percentage of the time, anecdotally, when you raise prices, is it a good decision? And what percent of the time do you have to roll them back? I'm guessing it's 85% of the time a good decision, but I just want to spot check.
You know, Andrew, it's 100% of the times is a good decision. Sorry to cut. It's 100% of the times a good decision. You know why? Because if it didn't work, at least you learned something.
Yeah.
And you learned it fast. Mm-hmm. You know, the worst thing that can happen is, okay, conversion rate tanks, sales tanks for a week, I don't know, 2-3 days. You see it, okay, revert back. I know that I cannot sell at this price. I know people are not buying at this price, or I know people are not satisfied at this price. They are complaining. Okay, I learned. Time to move on to the next thing, because adjusting the pricing of this product is not going to get me anywhere. So it's 100% of the times. There's literally, I've had so many conversations of the fear of moving the pricing. I said, don't care about it. It's worse if you don't move for 6 months, 1 year, and then you figure out later on, oh, I could have had that profitability or that increased revenue if I had just taken that simple step of changing the price.
Yeah, makes total sense. What were the other one or two things, big levers?
Another big lever that I'm also surprised many times people don't get how strong it is the way to do bundling. Yeah, to increase the AOV. One thing that is quite key for us is having the right AOV level to actually be able to advertise. If you are a very low AOV, which is below $50, it's very tough to grow on the back of paid media. Yeah. So every effort you make to constantly increase your AOV, maintain a good conversion rate, it will only help your bottom line. Yeah. It will give you more room to advertise because the CPMs are constantly increasing every year. It gets harder and harder to reach the right people at the right price. So if you are able to increase your AOV, you're able to guarantee that you have a higher profitability. Yeah. So increasing the AOV is one of the big things, and bundling, it's a clear way to do it. So if that's going to be creating bundle of best-selling products, of complementary products together, but just making sure that you have a play and you give visibility to an offer that is a bundle. So if your product is usually at 25, make sure that you have a bundle of 3, a bundle of 4 that has a good discount, but people see that, hey, it's way more value for money if I go and buy this bundle. Therefore, your AOV increases, you have more room on profitability side, you have more room on the marketing side, and you can do this very quickly. It's very easy to set up.
Yeah. What about the content machine? We talked about this a little bit last episode, building out a scalable content machine. Maybe you can touch on the high points of it, and we can drag people back to their episode for kind of the in-depth nitty-gritty. But maybe high points, and then also what's changed in the last 9 months since we talked last?
What changed? AI. The biggest change for me is AI and how it made things way better, way easier, and way faster to implement a content machine. So right now, we used to find it a hassle to find the right designers, video editors, even huge actors and influencers to perform in the videos. And nowadays with AI, we are able to create astonishing pictures with Midjourney. We're able to create scripts with ChatGPT. We're able to create voiceovers with 11 Labs. We're able to clone the voices of our main influencers with 11 Labs as well. It just gave us, our output just increased by 100x.
The Midjourney ones, the imagery makes sense. Are you using that mostly for ad copy? Like, are you using quite a bit of AI generated stuff as the product photography? For what specific ways are you using the imagery for your e-commerce businesses?
That's where it's a good question. This is where you have to get a little bit smart. And with Midjourney, basically, you're able to create astonishing pictures. Yeah, you're able to create from scratch with just a prompt, amazing looking picture. Yeah. From creating a prompt to creating the right prompt, there is a learning curve, yeah, and there's a lot of materials out there to explain to you how to use the parameters right, how to adjust the parameters for the pictures right, etc. It's a steep curve for learning, but it's a necessary curve. Otherwise, you just stay in the basic prompting and then you don't get very far. But the smart thing about it is when you don't think that you're going to have a finalized asset to advertise, is when you get the base asset that is going to be Photoshopped later on with whatever you want. So let's say people try to think how they are going to make, how to put their product in Midjourney and create a product photography in Midjourney. No, you should think about how you're going to create a picture, a setting that has all the right elements, and later on you can Photoshop your product on top of it. So if someone needs to hold that product, you just need to find, create a setting, beautiful, astonishing setting, whatever needs to be in the background, whatever colors, whatever elements, with a person in the right pose holding nothing. And then you're going to go and Photoshop your product there. Understand? So Midjourney is great to have the base picture, the base assets, and later on you add, Photoshop the elements you need to add to finalize the creative. So this is where you go 100x while people are still trying to, okay, I want to do this, but I cannot create the picture from scratch. It doesn't look good with my product on it. It's never going to look good. It's not there yet. Yeah.
And then in terms of the pillars of the content machine, that the formula you're using or advising a lot of companies to use, what are the broad strokes of that? Are you using content or using video? Is it a combination of a lot of different things? Is it something we need another three episodes to talk about? Because I'm sure, you know, content marketing itself, you know, we talk about that for weeks, but what do you really focus on in building a sustainable content and lead gen system through Facebook?
Yeah. So for the content machine, there's an entire process of how you constantly feed a machine with assets. You process those assets into concepts like testimonials, us versus them, before and after, etc. You have a high test and iteration phase where you test hundreds of creatives and you try to find the creatives which really stand out in terms of desire. And desire for us is CTR and CPC. Yeah. And once you start to find out in this big iteration phase which are the ones that stand out, you start doing minimum effort, maximum impact things, which is do slight variations of those assets. Yeah. So we invest a lot of time trying to create assets that can be put into concepts that can be released in bulk. Yeah. And once we have a lot of things that have been tested on, we find out what are the outliers. So a rule of thumb that I always advise people is if you're not spitting out 25 creatives per week, then you're not spitting out enough creatives. This is just a way to say, hey, if we force ourselves to create 25 different types of content every week, yeah, we will ultimately train on how to create good assets. And this might be pictures, this might be videos, it needs to be a healthy mix. It cannot be only videos, it cannot be only pictures. But if you force yourself, hey, I'm going to develop and create 25 different advertisements, they don't need to be unique, totally unique. They can be variations, slight variations. But if you practice, you are going to get good at it. And it's like, okay, now I'm able to get the best out of ChatGPT, get the best out of Midjourney, get the best out of the editing software for videos and pictures. And therefore, you set yourself for success.
You know, we started talking about the ideal P&L, right? Like the percentages you need to look at. I think for payroll, you had said we need to keep, you know, 15% max payroll, but spending 25% of our top line, ideally or less, sustainably on paid ads. How do you advise, and it's going to vary a little bit by every company, but this, the process of the iterative testing, the coming up with the creative, what's your go-to suggestion for people on getting to that phase? Because it's a meaningful amount of work for people who don't do a lot of Facebook stuff. Do you see success with a lot of agencies that do this once you get the positioning in a good place? Do you advise like the founders to spend some time doing this and then hire it out? Is this something that's worth chipping into that 15% on the payroll to bring someone in-house? How do you see that role usually getting flushed out? Is it payroll? Is it agency? Thoughts there?
Usually it's payroll. And it's usually, I'm not talking about creating the asset, but having a strategist for that. So having that creative person or the person with the creative strategy that is going to figure out how to constantly have assets coming into the company, this is in the payroll. And then you can outsource to a video editing agency, to freelancers that are going to do specific tasks for you, photoshopping, video editing, dubbing, whatever. But if you have that person who's in charge, okay, how do we get the constant flow of videos? Oh, we need to send to a bunch of influencers. We need to change our packaging to make sure that the customers are tagging us. We need to find a way that we are reaching out for creators in Influee, in TikTok marketplace, to make sure we have a constant flow of videos. Yeah, we need to experiment a lot with Midjourney to try and create a lot of pictures and see how we can use those pictures. So this is internal.
God, I love that role. I don't even know what you call it, but it's the person who's responsibility is to keep the creative assets fire hose on and coming in and all those things. Yeah, interesting. Last one I want to talk about, commercial calendar. And I was surprised this was on here that you mentioned, like the importance of planning out your content. Like it's, a lot of people do this, but the fact that this is one of the top biggest mistakes that you see people make or one of the most important things that you help companies do to thrive and scale was, I was surprised that this one was on the list. So talk a little bit about that if you would, please.
Yeah, and after that, there's the biggest one actually, which is the first one, this product market fit. But if we have to touch the calendar, it's also surprising how this is not set in many companies because they see, all of them see the impact once they do it, but they don't organize themselves to do it. So what I mean by that, I think every business owner can relate to, oh, I just released a new product and I had an avalanche of sales. I released a new thing or a new promotion and, whoa, I made the month. And still, you do not plan to have a frequent basis to release a new message, be it a merchandising, a promotion, a new product, a new community, a new feature, be whatever. But if you set a target, again, and this is another target we sell to all our companies, try to have something new to speak every 2 weeks. I don't know what it is. It doesn't matter for me what it is. But if you force yourself to every 2 weeks have something new to talk about, be it a product release, be it a different promotion, be it a free gift, be it a Valentine's campaign, Mother's Day campaign, I don't know, set your calendar to see if you can speak about something new or push a new message every 2 weeks. Once you get into that flow, you have a constant bump of revenues every 2 weeks, maintaining your level of growth, or at least your level of revenue for the month. And then you create a system to say, I'm not at the mercy of how things are going to go for a specific season, for a specific time of Facebook advertisement, for a specific time of the economy. You set a system for success, which again, every month I speak something that is interesting to my customers with a frequency of every 2 weeks. They are trained that I'm always coming up with something new, be it products, be it promotions, be it features, whatever. And that way you're able to keep up a good level of revenue growing up.
Product market fit, we should have talked on this at the very top, is the one that makes the most sense right out of the gates. And also it kind of just flows, everything flows from it. How do people know if they have it? Like, I mean, there's a lot of people that have revenue that you're talking to that necessarily don't have product market fit. So what are some of the signs that you may need to tweak things, tweak either your product or tweak your audience to really be able to hit kind of that stride that makes everything else easier?
Yeah, we look at product market fit in the e-com business with four KPIs. Yeah. But the first KPI is the most important KPI for people to understand if they have something actually worth scaling, which is the reviews. Well, the people overlook that so much. Like, if you don't have really high reviews, if your company is not constantly getting a good flow of reviews, and it's not above 4.6, 4.7 out of 5, there is something broken. There is something that is not quite there yet, be it on the shipping experience, on the product quality, on the pricing, whatever. And if you don't have that, you're not going to scale successfully, because you're always going to be going back and forth of, hey, a lot of people are complaining, this is not working, we cannot scale much farther, let's take a step back. So the reviews is the first indicator, and grabbing a lot of reviews, striving to get the high response rate on the reviews, and seeing if you have a really high level. Yeah. So this is the first KPI, trying to understand if you have enough reviews, if you have enough validation that a lot of people love the product, would love to buy it again, super satisfied, and are really pleased with the experience. Yeah. Second is the repurchase rate. So this is the other point that we didn't go through, but is a minimum effort, maximum impact. The repurchase rate for us should be 30% and above. So minimum 30%. This is your profitability buffer. Yeah. If you don't have a high repurchase rate, it's very hard to remain profitable throughout the whole year. Because basically, you spend a lot of money to acquire a customer, but the time to monetize on that customer is the highest profit time. Yeah. So the lowest effort, highest impact on a repurchase rate is working on your CRM, working your email, SMS, fixing the flows, having campaigns, testing campaigns. And this is really easy, as easy as hiring an email agency to start fixing all your flows, your lead generation pop-ups, testing with campaigns. And this can really be a cheap way to get the ball rolling and start your repurchase rate going up. Yeah. The third one would be AOV, as I discussed. Like, it's for us, if you are below 50 euros AOV, it's quite hard to scale, keep it profitable, and have a room. If you're not there now, it doesn't mean you cannot get there. It just means that you have to think of different ways that you're going to bundle things up, come up with new products, come up with upsells, come up with promotions that have a threshold for free shipping, a threshold for a higher discount. So you just need to think of ways of, if you have a product that has low unit cost, how you can make this attractive to have a higher AOV. So 50 and above, we usually say it's a sweet spot at 75. And the last one is conversion rate. Conversion rate, it's a little bit tricky because it requires context. But usually when we see brands that are below 7 figures, yeah, so 6 figures and hitting there the 1 million mark per year, if they have a conversion rate that is below 3%, it means that they don't have that much room once you start pushing paid media, yeah, to still be profitable. Because I've seen a lot of companies that are at the 1%, 1.5%, have a low AOV, and don't have a significant amount of revenues yet. So once you start pumping in paid traffic, this conversion rate is just going to go way lower. And then there's a lot of effort to get one sale on. Yeah, a lot of traffic to have one sale on. So when we look at this $50 AOV, when we look at the company that is around 1 million, we usually think 3% conversion rate is a good level, and you can make proportions out of that. Okay, I make much more revenue, or I already spend money on paid media, my conversion rate is that. So you can try to, it's just a rule of thumb, right? But if you're already very low in the 1%, 1.5% range, it's tricky.
Last question I got to ask, you went through all these things, the financials, the leverage points, the content, the commercial calendar, and the product market fit. You chat with a lot of stores and you come in and you kind of tell them, even though they want to hear it, it's still hard. You're telling them their baby is ugly. It's got defects. It's got the third leg coming out the side. Always sometimes hard to hear. What is the thing that entrepreneurs are most either defensive about or least likely to acknowledge as an issue? Like, where do we get defensive? Where do the store owners get defensive and say, yes, but you don't understand? Because I'm sure people do that. And I'm sure, everyone listening, myself included, would do the same thing if we had a full, colonoscopy of our business and with the diagnosis. So where people get defensive, and where are they most likely to try to explain away the need to do some of these things?
And the reviews is the clear one. Like, once you don't have amazing reviews, you always have an excuse why, or you always have an explanation why. But it's just the fact that if it's not high, it's not going to go far. So it's very easy to say, the reviews are low. People complain about the shipping experience, but yeah, we can only ship it with this courier, or we can only have it with this SLA. Okay, then you understand that it's not going to go far because you cannot have a good shipping experience. The same thing, and because the reviews are going to bring back all the ugliness, they're going to bring back the shipping issues, the quality issues, the customer support issues. All the issues come up with from the voice of the customer. People get defensive to really say, okay, we don't have, our review is now a 4 or is a 4.2, and there's a lot of people complaining about this one section. But you need to fix it. Otherwise you're not gonna go far.
Yeah. I love it. That makes so much sense.
We have been experimenting a lot with that, and that has brought us amazing results. If you have enough reviews, and I mean enough, like 500 reviews, even you can do it with 300, but if you have 500 plus reviews, if you compile all of that and you're able to go through ChatGPT or ChatPDF, yeah, upload the document there, and you're basically going to start asking questions to that document. Okay, I'm trying to understand how my customers perceive my brand, my experience, and the quality. Can you please tell me? Okay, what people are talking about the price? What do people say about repurchasing? Why they would repurchase? Why wouldn't they? How do they view the competitors? What is the biggest USP we have? What is the most commented factor? Or that they say that they were satisfied. Okay, got all of that out of the gate. Please build me a compilation of that as a single review. Okay, now turn this review into an ad script. Okay, now turn this ad script into 10 ad headlines. Okay, now turn this into a product description. So out of that, and if you have enough feedback, this is a gold mine. This is a gold mine to find use cases to build landing pages, build product description text, build scripts for advertisement, copy for advertisement. It's just endless. You just need to have a use case because everything is there. And what people usually commit the mistake is, okay, let's stop now and let's think how we can sell this product. No. You have enough. If you have enough reviews, your customers will tell you exactly why and how you should sell it to them. It's written there. You just need to process that data.
I've heard and used reviews in ChatGPT to get kind of some talking points, but to be able to extend that all the way further to landing pages and product descriptions and copy, like, I love that. That's super smart.
And I give you one last one, just because it's also good. If you use a software called Octoparse, you're able to scrape all the reviews of your competitors and you do the same exercise. So you know exactly what people are thinking about the competitors and how do they view the products of the competitors. So you can scrape.
What was the name of that tool?
Octoparse.
Octoparse.
So you can scrape Trustpilot, Lux, JudgeMe. I think for Amazon, there's another app we use. I don't remember now, but you basically are able to go through all your competitors and see exactly what people, if you don't have enough reviews, you can see exactly what people appreciate or don't appreciate.
Love it. Leo, this is fantastic. Loved all of it, especially love the financial geek out section. You're speaking to me with the numbers and the percentages. Before we wrap up here, talk about Jump. Who do you work with? Who's a good fit? What can people expect? And maybe if you've got a case study or two of brands you've helped in terms of what you've done for them. Any and all would be great to hear.
Yeah, so at Jump, we are growing very fast. We have a portfolio of companies now that are all e-com D2C companies. They all started doing mentoring coaching with us, and we got to actually invest in them or accelerate them. And this is how we try to look for other companies to start a relationship with us. We do a mentoring track or a coaching track, depending on how they where they're at in their journey. This is a pro bono exercise we do. And if we believe we have a good relationship, we believe in the business, they also believe in us, we end up investing and trying to accelerate them. So all e-com business owners that are in within that seven-figure range, six-figure range, that want to get to the eight-figure, want to scale their business rapidly, we are here. Please reach out to us in our website at jumpventures.co and fill in the intake form, and we will try to get back as soon as possible to set up a date to talk. But then this is how we start a relationship. We try to understand if we can help first, because we do this pro bono. In the end of the day, we get a lot of inquiries, and we start a lot of relationship with entrepreneurs by just helping them out first. And if things materialize in the future, great. If they don't, we get a lot of energy from this. Jump was born out of passion, and it's something that really energizes me to continue as well.
Love it. Well, Leo, thank you for sharing everything. It's super cool what you're doing. I know a handful of, or at least a couple of brands you've worked with that have had amazing success and spoken highly of it. So well done, sir. Thanks for coming on for another episode. And thanks for being a part of ECF. Well, we missed you this year in Florida, but hoping to catch you next time. And always appreciate everything you share, man. You're wealth of knowledge on this stuff. So thank you a ton, and good seeing you.
Me too, Andrew. Thanks a lot for the platform, and I hope it helps all the entrepreneurs out there. And happy sales.
Happy sales. That's going to do it for this week. A big thank you to OneClick Upsell, who offers incredible upsell software to get more from every single customer and increase your average order value on your site. To make more money from the customers you already have, check them out at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. And if you own a seven or eight figure store, you really should be a part of our private community and forums here at eCommerce Fuel, where you can connect with over 1,200 store owners just like you. We're so confident it'll be a game changer that we offer a 10x ROI guarantee. If you don't see 10x your membership value in the first year, we'll refund you 100% of your membership fees plus toss in an extra $1,000 for the hassle. So you can learn more and apply at ecommercefuel.com. Thanks so much for listening. Work hard, adventure often, and look forward to seeing you again next Friday.